This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is On the Media. I'm Bob Garfield.
And I'm Brooke Gladstone. Every 4 years, a caravan of national news networks descends on a remote corner of New Hampshire to broadcast the first results from the first-in-the-nation primary, votes cast in the midnight hour.
And it's really underway, everyone. Looking live now, this is Dixville Notch, New Hampshire, where in just 2 hours, midnight Eastern time, residents of this tiny town will do what they do every 4 years.
What appears on the TV screen usually looks like a slice of small-town USA.
9 voters in Dixville Notch will vote at midnight in a picture postcard town just shy of the Canadian borders.
A small, quaint town in New Hampshire.
This is really a page out of the Norman Rockwell book. It's amazing up here how engaged people are.
As a picture-perfect image of participatory democracy and another early bellwether to appease insatiable outlets and anxious audiences, Dixville once drew in the entire world.
Voters in the New Hampshire hamlet of Dixville Notch received ballot papers, ready to cast the first election day votes in the presidential.
But the story of midnight voting first in the nation Dixville Notch is profoundly misleading. It is not now, nor has it ever been, what it seemed to be. For the real story, we turn to our friends at New Hampshire Public Radio, who have been reporting on the first-in-the-nation primary in their podcast series, Stranglehold. Co-host Jack Rodolico takes it from here.
I think we're going to see it when we come around this bend here.
Casey McDermott is one of our colleagues here at NHPR, and last winter she drove me to see Dixville Notch in person. She drove us 25 miles from the Canadian border. The first thing you notice is there is no quaint little town. There's no stoplight, no town hall, just one very striking building tucked into the middle of a mountain range.
Like, it's like a grand resort.
Even from this distance, it's clear that resort is empty.
Oh, whoa, that building does not look good.
Yeah.
It's obvious. This place has been closed for years.
Like a castle in the ground.
For 100 years, the Balsams Resort was a playground for the rich. And the story of how the place became a media obsession, that all starts with one man.
Neil Tillotson, I think of him as kind of like New Hampshire's Forrest Gump, in that his story just intersects with history in all kinds of really interesting ways over the literal century that he was alive.
He was born in 1898, and he died in 2001. And in that time, he met a lot of amazing people.
I had the honor of meeting him. He was like 103 at the time, and I said...
That's the voice of a two-time New Hampshire primary winner, the late Senator John McCain.
Mr. Tillotson, who was your favorite of all these candidates that you met? And he said, my favorite was Mr. Roosevelt. And I said, Franklin Roosevelt was really a revolutionary? He said, no, Theodore Roosevelt. So
Neil Tillotson drops out of high school, leaves home, lands a gig at a rubber manufacturer. He enlists in the army, pursues Pancho Villa and his men under the command of General John J. Pershing. He returns to the rubber manufacturer, becomes a researcher there. Tillotson didn't have much formal education, but he's a natural in the lab, inquisitive, creative, a real problem solver. He even has a lab at home where he tinkers with stuff in his off time. One of his favorite items to work with is latex. And it's here, in his home laboratory, where Tillotson hits gold in 1931 in the midst of the Great Depression. Tillotson dips some cardboard into the liquid rubber and successfully makes the world's first novelty balloon, a cat balloon, to be precise. It was shaped like a cat's face, little ears and all. Turns out a lot of people were willing to buy these things. The Tillotson Rubber Company was born. Tillotson Rubber invents the world's first latex exam gloves. Manufacturing expands. Tillotson's fortune grows a lot. And halfway through Tillotson's life, when he was a very rich man, he had one of those Forrest Gump moments. Not far from where he'd grown up in Vermont, a piece of property went for sale in New Hampshire. It really caught his eye. It was the Balsams Resort, tucked into that beautiful valley in the mountains. When Tillotson bought the Balsams, Dixville Notch was what's called an unorganized place. That means if people there wanted to vote, they had to drive to another town just to cast a ballot. Tillotson changed that when he established the midnight voting tradition. And in watching news coverage today, you might get the impression that Dixville is the place this midnight voting tradition was born. But that's not the case.
I found news stories talking about this happening in Massachusetts, in Alabama.
The Morning Story on Election Day might list vote tallies from a handful of towns all over the country. Some had voted at midnight, others at maybe 3 in the morning. It was a filler piece while the country waited for the final results. But for the press, there was kind of a hassle to scramble to collect the results overnight. It would have been so much easier if just one town voted at midnight.
Neil Tillotson and this reporter for a wire service basically came up with the idea that if Dixville did its vote at midnight, this reporter would make sure that their results were the ones that were broadcast to the rest of the world as being first in the nation.
Journalism in the 1950s ran on telephones. Pictures were sent from the field to newsrooms by phone lines, and the Balsams Resort had its own telephone company, its own power plant, and space for teams of reporters to set up shop. What a nice little story to share with your readers. While you were sleeping last night, this little town in New Hampshire stayed up late just to vote first. These people really take democracy seriously. And it was a story that required readers not to ask too many questions about this perfect little democracy. That folksy-looking town moderator in a bow tie? He was actually a millionaire. All those townies smiling after they voted? A lot of them were his employees. During the next presidential election, to ensure that Dixville Notch really voted first, Tillotson made sure his town voted at midnight in the primary, months before the general election.
It was kind of off to the races. Like, by the time the 1964 primary, Dixville was on the map as the face of the New Hampshire primary.
It's been a while since I looked at these pictures. They're not arranged in chronological order.
This is Tom Tillotson, Neil Tillotson's son, one of the only residents left in Dixville Notch. And he showed us this wall of pictures. They're kind of like part family photo album and part history textbook.
That's my dad talking to Reagan. Came back for the
Bill Clinton
election.
Came to Dixville Notch, both Bushes, each election cycle. It was like the circus came to town.
He brought in an elephant into the hotel. This is Popsicle, a 700-pound baby elephant.
Mitt Romney's father, George Romney, when he ran for president in 1968, he kicked off his campaign by schlepping a baby elephant to a town in New Hampshire with about 10 voters.
There was a local fellow who was a Democrat, and he was trying to smuggle a donkey into the ballroom, and they shut the elevator off with him and the donkey in it.
It's been a while since Dixville Notch was a must stop for presidential candidates in the New Hampshire primary. Campaigns mostly ignore it now. But the press keeps showing up to tell the same story about the little town that votes. And when they do, they usually miss the real story of what life has been like up there. After Neil Tillotson died, the Balsams Resort changed hands a few times. It closed its doors in 2011. Casey wanted to talk to people who knew the place in its heyday, so she wound up on the doorstep of Ray Gorman. She met him right as he was trying to get his dog, who's blind, back in the house.
Penny, over here, Daryl. Come on. Come with Dad.
Ray Gorman was the longtime head of security and basically keeping the place running.
Mr. Miscellaneous, I used to call myself sometimes. At the hotel, I was a person a lot of people go to if they needed something, all right? They needed a bulb, they needed this, they needed that.
It was his job to do, well, anything and everything that was needed, especially for the press.
Ray was the one who made sure that the cables were run, made sure the nosy reporters who were trying to spy in the ballot room, he made sure that they couldn't get in there.
Had guests tripping over cords. That was always a big thing. And that's like, you know, the insurance company does not want to hear about that.
To project the image that the media expected of this perfect little democracy where everyone votes, Ray Gorman was given some assignments that were very miscellaneous, like fetching someone who did not show up to vote.
I went and picked him up once, drunk on a skunk, naked, sitting in his chair. Ray, I ain't going down there tonight. I don't give a what you're doing.
A missing voter would be a really big deal for the media's story. Legally, if your town votes at midnight in New Hampshire, you can't close the polls until every voter is accounted for. That means the show's dramatic conclusion, the vote tally, couldn't be announced if someone was missing.
He's naked. I figured sobered him up, dressed him up, loaded him in the van, hauled him out.
The national media comes in to capture the image of free elections and civic engagement, but they rarely acknowledge that it all started for the convenience of the press. And we are certainly not the first people to notice that.
I'm going out for some pizza. You want any?
Oh, I'll go get it. I want to get some.
The West Wing. In this scene, it's the night before the New Hampshire primary. Deputy White House Chief of Staff Josh Lyman and Press Secretary C.J. Clegg are closely watching a little town in New Hampshire that's going to vote at midnight.
It is absurd that 42 people have this kind of power.
I think it's nice.
Do you?
I think it's democracy at its purest.
Unsurprisingly, it's the press secretary that comes to the town's defense.
This is the difference between you and me.
You're a sap.
Those 42 people are teaching us something about ourselves, that freedom is the glory of God, that democracy is its birthright, and that our vote matters.
You getting the pizza? Or?
Yeah, I should call ahead.
What Dixville Notch symbolized came to kind of outweigh what Dixville Notch actually was.
Remember the Trump Voter Fraud Commission? Around then, Casey had this question running around in her head. Does voter fraud ever actually happen here in New Hampshire? So she got a stack of files from the attorney general's office.
There was this case in this town and this case in that town. And then I come across a few cases in Dixville Notch. And I end up finding out that the state had actually launched a full-scale investigation.
During the 2016 general election, the AG's office got a tip from someone who'd seen a TV segment about the vote in Dixville Notch. The tipster who was watching recognized one of those voters, and she thought, he doesn't live in Dixville Notch.
Dixville Notch keeping their tradition of 100%.
I mean, the obvious problem here is that if you don't live somewhere, you're not allowed to vote there.
Basically, the state had questions about almost every single voter who cast a ballot in Dixville in 2016. One voter has not had a home in Dixville for decades, but he just felt so strongly that he wanted to continue voting in Dixville that he did.
As far as I know, I'm legally a resident here. I've tried to do everything right.
He has other residences in other parts of the state, and then as well as actually on Martha's Vineyard. He would drive all the way up to Dixville to vote in the elections, but would go to bed, brush his teeth, go home somewhere else.
Nine voters, not a lot of chance of voter fraud. Carl Cameron, we will stay on it and stay on you.
And Casey says the way that, quote, voter fraud usually plays out in American elections is the way it did in Dixville. It's really about confusion.
You know, as someone who covers voting laws, there is a lot of genuine gray area. Where do you get to actually call your home for voting purposes?
Ultimately, the state did not charge anyone in Dixville Notch with wrongful voting, but Associate Attorney General Ann Edwards did say that most of the people who voted there in 2016 should have voted somewhere else.
Like, is there any concern that, like, the AG's office might end up ruining the midnight voting?
If the tradition needs to end because Dixville doesn't have enough registered voters to be able to vote, then sadly the tradition will end. But the Attorney General's office's responsibility is to enforce the election laws.
In 2019, NHPR aired Casey's reporting on the election inconsistencies in Dixville Notch. her story wound up on a Facebook page for a town called Millsfield.
Let me just read this aloud.
Two things you should know about Millsfield. One, it's right next door to Dixville Notch. And two, remember how we said back in 1960, Dixville pushed other towns' midnight voting traditions out of the media spotlight? Well, Millsfield was one of those towns. It voted at midnight before Dixville did. Here's what the Facebook page said.
In Millsfield, any observer can see that we pay careful attention to details in ensuring that our elections are conducted in a strictly lawful manner. First and foremost, we have residents who are indisputably Millsfield citizens.
Shade.
It's really funny. Keep going.
Millsfield citizens are duly elected each March to
The Post goes on to list all kinds of ways that Millsfield follows each and every election law.
For any questions about Millsfield's midnight voting traditions, please contact Wayne Urso via email at com.
And this is all Wayne who's writing this.
Yes.
So Wayne has got a chip on his shoulder about Dixville.
Hi, Wayne.
It must be Casey.
Yep.
Casey drove up to Millsfield, and Wayne introduced her to a couple other voters there, Sonia and Charlie Sheldon, who own a B&B called A Piece of Heaven.
How are you?
I'm fine.
This
is Sonia's husband, Charlie.
Hi, Casey. Nice to meet you.
Millsfield has about 20 or so residents, and almost all of them are voting age. It's a community where people live full-time. They're being sort of diplomatic about the town next door with all its voting problems. And then she said one thing that got a big reaction. Casey mentioned the AG's report and how there was a question hanging over almost everyone who voted in Dixville in 2016.
If the hotel is not being heated, if the hotel has no running water, no sanitation facilities, how can anyone be living there? It doesn't make sense.
Before Casey drove all the way up to Millsfield, there was one other thing she found in her research, something about the history of Millsfield's midnight vote and how far back it went.
November 4th, 1936. And this says, New Hampshire town is first in the nation to vote. Millsfield.
Casey brought those articles to Millsfield and read one to the voters there.
It was the first time in history that the American public has been able to read any election returns in the morning newspapers of Election Day.
Midnight voting was invented in Millsfield. And when she got done reading the article aloud, Casey realized the people there in Millsfield, they didn't know it. And this little competitive edge crept into their voices.
We were truly the first. Dixville Notch cannot deny that now. Just cannot deny it.
Not only was Dixville trying to hold on to their tradition, but the press, they were willing accomplices.
And one more thing. The person we most associate with midnight voting is Neil Tillotson. But in the oldest article Casey could find, the story gave all the credit for dreaming up the idea to one person, Genevieve Natick. When she invented midnight voting in 1936, Genevieve was only 27 years old, an artist and a pillow maker. Her grandfather had been alive when Abraham Lincoln was assassinated. The town she lived in had no electricity. The midnight vote she planned was a surprise to the press and the world, but not to her neighbors. She had invited them over for cookies and coffee. They came to her house in the rain, and when the clock struck 12, they all voted together, and they made history.
Coming up, more from New Hampshire Public Radio's podcast, Stranglehold.
This is On the Media.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.